Hello, I'm Rachel Schofield. Welcome to the Bokomi podcast, introducing you to books full of original, memorable insights, or OMI, from the most wanted minds in business, science, technology, and culture. In this episode, we hear from the former BuzzFeed senior lifestyle editor, challenging us to take an honest look at our friendships in an age where flakiness has become the norm and loneliness is rife.
I had a friend sent me a text. I'm in your neighborhood. Do you want to get together this weekend? And I just didn't have it in me. I care about her and I wanted to see her, but I just knew I didn't have it in me. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna try something different. And I just said, you know, I've had a really tiring week and I promised myself I would just hunker down this weekend and not do anything else. And she was fine with it. Like, it wasn't a big deal at all, because I think most people understand that feeling.
In The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People, Rachel Wilkerson-Miller wants us to first get totally clear about what we need, want, and just won't put up with, so that in turn we can get better at supporting our family, friends, and colleagues. You might describe it as a handbook to nurturing, challenging, and sometimes even culling our relationships. And at a time when staying connected has been sadly hampered by COVID-19, it couldn't be more timely. Rachel joins us from New York, where she currently works as the Deputy Editor, Life at Vice. Rachel, welcome to the Bokomi podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great that you're with us. Now, in the book, you say you've got to be honest when people ask how you're doing. So I have to ask you, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's been a long week. It's been a long couple of weeks, but I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Good. That's a good start. Now, I'm fascinated because on the cover of your book, you've written that this is all about friendship in an age of flakiness. And I wonder why it is that you think we've become so bad at maintaining friendships in the modern age.
Well, I think it's a strange thing because we are really connected, probably more connected than humans have ever been in history. So there's all these opportunities to connect, but I think the problem is that they're not necessarily meaningful connections, and they trick us into thinking that we are connecting with our friends just because we're scrolling through our Instagram feed and seeing occasional photos of them or their families or their babies. But that's not the same as having a phone call or having coffee with somebody. So I think it's that feeling of I'm so connected, I'm stretched so thin, that makes people feel like, oh, I can't possibly, you know, go out for coffee right now because I'm overwhelmed by the amount of connecting I'm doing. But in reality, the coffee would actually probably be more satisfying and make you feel more connected than scrolling through Instagram. So it's this sort of paradox of a ton of opportunities connected at our fingertips, but we're not really using them to the best of our ability. And we're sort of easily distracted by all the communication at the same time.
Yeah, so there's this kind of strange tension in modern life, I guess, isn't there, that we are always available, and yet we're never fully focused on anything.
Exactly.
So you're saying to people, we need to take a really close look at this in order to show up properly for our friends. What do you mean by show up?
Well, showing up kind of, it's one of those things that can be hard to describe, but you know it when you see it. But I think at a really base level, it is bearing witness to who people are and what they're experiencing. And when I say people, that also includes you. You know, the whole first half of the book is about showing up for yourself. So it's about being really present and aware of what's happening. It's about naming things that are happening. So it's as simple as saying, like, I feel sad or I feel angry. Like, that's a form of showing up, because you are bearing witness to the thing you're experiencing. And once you do that, then you can, you know, communicate, you know, this is what I'm here for you. You've got this. Whatever you need, we can get through this. It's letting people or yourself know you're not alone in this world.
And you make the point there that the first half of the book is all about getting to grips with your own self, really, and understanding what you need. And it seems to me you're making the point that humans are essentially very bad at being honest about what they want and what makes them happy and what makes them mad.
Yeah, I think that it's difficult. I think we all sort of go through the world on autopilot and don't necessarily sit down with ourselves and think, what am I feeling right now? Or how do I feel about this? Or what's going on with me? And what do I need? And when you don't do that, when you don't figure out what your values are, what your priorities are, it becomes very easy to let other people determine how you spend your time, how you spend your money, basically how you spend your life. So I think getting right with yourself and thinking about, okay, what do I want? And you might not be able to have those things all the time, but kind of having that is a thing you can refer back to of, like, what are my big priorities right now? What is most important to me? Having that in the back of your mind makes it a lot easier to say, okay, here's what I need, and here's how I can then meet my own needs so that I can be available to other people.
And you make the point that that's not a process that happens overnight. That's almost a kind of audit, a self-audit that you have to do and work through. And there are exercises almost in the book to get people to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's something that you have to do regularly because our needs and our priorities and our values change all the time. So, you know, 1 week you might be, or 1 month or a year, you might be really focused on work, or you might be really focused on family, or you might be ill. And, you know, if you even have a cold, you might, your needs change, right? Because you're sick and that changes everything. So I think kind of constantly checking in with yourself and saying, how's this feeling? How am I doing? What do I need? And I don't think it has to be burdensome at all. I think it's more of just making that kind of thinking a regular part of your life. It becomes more habitual and a lot easier to do.
One of the things that you highlight that I think a lot of people struggle with, particularly, I dare say, women, is boundaries and working out where you get to say no in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that boundaries are an essential part of showing up for yourself because at the heart of it, you're trying to protect your time and energy. And I think it's important to remember that like we live in a society, you can't just say like, oh, I'm going to do this because I'm drawing a boundary. Like obviously you need to be intellectually honest about the boundaries that you're drawing and no one should use that as an excuse to be terrible to other people. But I think really thinking through, okay, what am I comfortable with? What am I comfortable sharing? What am I comfortable doing? What are certain things for me that are just not negotiable? And that can be how much time you spend with other people. That can be the topics of conversation that you're comfortable with. So I think just thinking through, okay, what do I actually feel comfortable with? And what has been true for me most of my life and where am I right now makes it a lot easier than to enforce those boundaries because you've done the work to think, okay, this is truly what I need and I know in my heart it's important to me. And once you have that, it becomes a lot easier to be confident in your saying no.
And how do you then, there's a step, isn't there, from understanding that in yourself to actually activating that in your life and having the confidence, I suppose, to start telling your friends and your family and your colleagues what you find acceptable and what you don't, and trying to share those boundaries in a way.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, it's like building a muscle. So it's good to start small with things that don't feel quite as high stakes. So it might be starting with a stranger. If a stranger, you know, asks you, you know, to like take their pamphlet or something like that, just saying like, oh, no, thank you. And moving on with your life, like starting to say no in smaller situations where it doesn't feel as stressful as telling, you know, a partner or a family member, it's absolutely not okay the way you talk to me. I think you build that confidence in situations that feel really, really minor. And that helps you do it when it feels really high stakes and important.
This is clearly a process you've worked through yourself. And I wonder if you can give us a bit of an insight, maybe some examples of how you have implemented those changes in your own life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that once you've sort of even just done the work of saying like boundaries are important, I'm going to do that more often, you'll start to see opportunities that present themselves. And I think in my case, I often have started small and sort of tested the waters to see how people respond. And the fact is, most people are great. Like several years ago, I had a friend, you know, sent me a text, I'm in your neighborhood, do you want to get together this weekend? And I just didn't have it in me. I care about her and I wanted to see her, but I just knew I didn't have it in me. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna try something different. And I just said, you know, I've had a really tiring week and I promised myself I would just hunker down this weekend and not do anything else. And she was fine with it. Like it wasn't a big deal at all because I think most people understand that feeling. And I think anyone who does have a problem with it is sort of telling on themselves, like they're telling you that they don't respect your boundaries. And that's actually important information to have. So I think it's good to see how people react and not worry too much or take it too personally if they have a really bad reaction to you setting a boundary. Like that's actually a good thing to know about a friend. And maybe you should think more about what's going on there with that relationship.
So take us then from the point where by looking at yourself and asking yourself these questions about what's important to you in friendships, where you have certain issues that are non-negotiable with friends and so on, how does that then help you show up better for other people in your life?
Well, I think once you get a good sense of who you are and what you need, it becomes easier to be compassionate to what other people need and who they are. Like when you've worked through these things with yourself and sort of thought about your motivation and what's going on with you, by nature, you'll start to do it for other people too. And you can start to recognize, okay, this person is maybe not setting the same boundary I'm setting, but I'm recognized that they are setting a boundary. And so I respect that because I would hope they would respect mine. But I think also at a really basic level, when you're meeting your own needs, when you are well rested, when you're eating well and getting enough water and getting enough sleep and taking care of yourself, you just at a really base level can be more focused on other people and can be more present with them. And, you know, if you've got a sense of how you want to be spending your time and days, you get to say, okay, I want to make sure I'm still spending time with my friends. And I have X amount of time each week to do that. So you can be coming from a place where you're like, oh yes, I care about these people. These are the people who are important to me. I'm so glad that I'm making time for them because they mean so much to me, instead of sort of feeling dragged along because you're stretched really thin and you haven't gotten any sleep in a week and you're coming from a really resentful place. So I think it allows you to be really generous and really compassionate when you're taking care of yourself.
There was one chapter that made me quite nervous as someone who doesn't like confrontation. I think you talked about practicing what you call radical candor and about the need that for all of us to have difficult conversations and to call people out if they say things that you're not comfortable with and so on. That made me, I have to say, slightly sweaty and hot. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think that being a good friend and showing up for your friends and other people requires you to have difficult conversations sometimes. And I think, you know, I think even thinking of it as a confrontation is maybe the wrong way to look at it, because I think once you have these conversations more and you realize you'll be okay and they'll be okay and things will be fine, they aren't necessarily fun, but they are manageable. So I think just, again, it's about trusting that if you're coming from a place of good faith and you trust your friends to hear you and respect you, that you can have these conversations and that actually they can really deepen a friendship, that when you say to somebody, hey, I care about you so much, but this thing you're doing, I don't love that. They realize, oh, you care about me enough to work on our friendship instead of just ditching me or resenting me for the next 5 years. You actually did the hard thing of talking to me about it. And so I think that getting more comfortable with the idea that friendships, like any relationships, are going to have difficult conversations, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, and it struck me that that's a particularly timely comment and thought process in the wake of a lot of what we're seeing in the news at the moment around Black Lives Matter, anti-racism, and the fact that even within our friendship groups, there are some perhaps quite difficult conversations that we need to be ready to have now more than ever.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of people, this is kind of a wake-up call because they're realizing how many times they didn't say anything at work or in their friend groups and were just silent and they're regretting it. And I think I'm glad that people are coming to that point. And I think it's really important to be direct with people. And it's hard, you know, as a Black woman, it's hard for me to say to white friends, I don't like this. I don't like the thing you're doing. But I had a conversation with a friend last week where she sort of wanted my opinion on something. She's white, I'm Black. She sort of asked my opinion without really checking with me that was okay first. And after we talked about the thing for a little bit, and then I kind of said to her, like, by the way, like I would have appreciated more of a heads up of what you wanted to talk about. And she was lovely about it. She was so apologetic, but didn't dwell on it. Like we talked about it. We moved on quickly. And she was like, thanks for setting that boundary with me. And I really appreciate it. And like, that to me is like, this is great. This is a great thing that just happened with me and this friend. And I'm really heartened by people who are looking at what's going on and paying attention and learning and doing the work and making their friendships better as a result.
And I suppose the key thing I hear from you is that it's about the fact that actually the relationship is, if it's built on enough trust, can survive those kind of interventions.
Totally. I think that's a really important thing. And I think if you jump straight to, you know, confronting somebody very aggressively, when you don't have that trust, when you're not really thinking through of how am I approaching this? Am I coming from a place of curiosity and kindness, or am I being accusatory and angry? I think when you know yourself and you know your people and kind of trust your audience, you will go far with that. Like most people are good and willing to listen. And I think the people who aren't, or when it doesn't work, that usually points to a deeper problem in the friendship, in my experience.
You mentioned that idea of curiosity, and that's one of the key tenets, coming to things with an open mind. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think curiosity is another thing that really allows you to be compassionate and be generous. So if your knee-jerk reaction when somebody is doing something that you don't like is just, you know, screw this person, what's wrong with them? That's not coming from a very curious place. The curious place is to think, okay, how can I assume best intentions? What might be going on with them instead of what's wrong with them? So it allows you to kind of think, okay, what it must they be going through right now? And it allows you to operate from a place of empathy. But I think curiosity in general is really great for showing up, because it's what keeps you reading articles about things that maybe don't apply to you right now, but will in the future. So, you know, reading about like how to support a friend if they're going through a miscarriage. Like, you might not have any friends who are going through a miscarriage right now, but if you click on that article now and you're curious about the answers, you'll have that in your mind for when it inevitably happens in your friend group. So I think that sense of curiosity of learning about different people in different situations just makes you a better friend to everyone.
You mentioned they're supporting friends through difficult times. And there was one of the parts of the book that I found really practical was all around how you show up for friends who have got those really difficult things on their plate, like family illness, like job loss, divorce, miscarriage, you mentioned. And a lot of that is all about the language you use. And you've clearly really tuned into all of this. And there are some really practical suggestions for people as to how you express yourself to people in those times to give them the support and show them that you're there.
Yeah, I think it's important to be, you know, as careful as you can be without stressing too much and worrying too much that you're going to make a mistake. But I think sort of having some tools in your back pocket for all of these different situations. My hope was that, you know, in reading this, people will remember some of these things, because the thing about, you know, your 20s and your 30s and your 40s and beyond is that bad things happen to you and your friends kind of a lot. Like, I got laid off last year and so did my entire team. We now have a pandemic. Like, bad things are always happening. And it's really scary and stressful. But what I feel good about knowing is that because I've been thinking about this for years, it helps me just, you know, if a friend gets laid off, I don't have to Google what to do if a friend gets laid off, because I've sort of laid that foundation. So my hope was that this book would sort of be a resource that you could read and things would stick in your mind, but also in a year, maybe you'll remember, oh, I think there was something about this in that showing up book. I'm going to go flip to that section and see if I can find the specifics for the situation to use as a jumping off point.
Job loss is a really timely one, because of course, a lot of people are facing uncertainty in their working world because of the pandemic. Give us, if you would, just some of those sort of practical tips, because there are certain situations where we reach for those cliches and they really land badly with people, understandably. But so what are some of the ways that we can get it right?
Well, I think you mentioned cliches. I think when somebody just lost their job or anything bad happened, this is not the time to say everything happens for a reason or you're better off, because that's probably not how they're feeling right now. So I think just tuning into what they're doing and saying and following their cues. I think one thing with job loss in particular is to ask before you start sending them job listings. Some people might find that helpful, but I think in a lot of cases, everyone who's looking for a job has seen every single job listing. So just saying, do you want me to send you relevant job listings, or are you good there? I also think remembering that when people lose their jobs, it's not just their job or even their financial security that they're losing. They're often losing their friends or their social connections. Or if you were in an office, you might be losing access to a laptop or a printer or a copier. So just thinking about how a job loss affects somebody's whole life, it really disrupts your routines. And just thinking these people are going to be different for a while. A friend who lost their job is going to probably be different. I was, and I didn't really expect to be, but it's a blow to the ego. Even just checking in to say, hey, you know, did you eat lunch today? Because I found that when I was unemployed, remembering to eat lunch was a big challenge. So little things like that, just keep an eye on you and looking out for you.
One of the issues you raised there, and I think it comes up quite a lot in the book, is what you might loosely kind of term the issue of consent, of kind of asking first before you dive in with an opinion or an offer to help in a way that you think is appropriate but may not be, is about getting permission. And I think that's a really, it seems to me, a very modern concept, but we've seen it grow and grow in a really powerful way, haven't we, from sort of the Me Too movement, issues around consent in physical relationships. And that is something that is a modern movement that seems to be really gaining traction in a positive way.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think that once we've sort of wrapped our heads around the fact that you should ask people, you know, can I give you a hug? It like starts to extend to other things, such as a conversation topic where you can say, is it cool to talk about this right now? Or do you want a break? Or, you know, before you send a friend an article, just giving them a heads up of like, hey, this is a really graphic article. You might want to save it for when you have time to focus on it, because I know you're working right now. So little things like that are so thoughtful. They go a long way. I've been really grateful to the friends of mine who've done that. That's how I've learned to turn around and do the same thing. And it's not a hindrance to conversation. It's not a hindrance to friendship. And no one's going to be heartbroken or devastated if you don't do that every time. But I think just trying to make a habit of just checking in more often and before you jump right into something really goes a long way. And I think people really appreciate that.
We've mentioned inevitably the pandemic several times. We can't let this go without discussing some of the impact of that on showing up for people, on relationships. We can't see people physically. We can't touch people. A lot of intimacy and closeness with friends has disappeared for the time being. What has lockdown, do you think, taught us about how we can best show up for people?
Well, I think I've been really heartened by the way that people have just jumped right into Zoom calls and friend hangouts and, you know, virtually. It shows me that we're going to be okay, that humans are incredibly social. And the fact that people were just like, okay, we can't see each other in person, so like we're having a Zoom call every Friday night with this group and every Sunday with this group. It's remarkable how flexible and adaptable people are. And I think that is really special and shouldn't be lost in all of this, that people are finding ways to be really creative and make things work. And I think that bringing creativity to your friendships is really important, because when we try to force something through and do things the same way, if we think, well, the only way that I can talk to people is via text or Zoom call, I will never get on the phone, that you're doing yourself a disservice. Sometimes you just got to pick up a phone and call the person who would rather have a phone conversation. So staying creative and flexible, I think, is really good. And I'm happy to see that happening amid such a terrible situation.
I wonder, moving forward, whether you've got any kind of practical tips for the guilty among us, in that there will be some people we've Zoomed with and kept in touch with in a brilliant way, but there may be a few people in our friendship circle or colleagues who we've kind of lost touch with through this pandemic, people we used to see a lot and we haven't really reached out to. What do we do then?
Well, I think it's thinking about why that is. Sometimes friendships are very reliant on convenience or proximity, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean that you don't care about that person or that they don't matter. It just means that they're a friend who you talk to every single day in your office, and that was great. But without that, there's not as much to go on, and that's okay. I think not every friendship has to be a best friendship. Not every friendship lasts forever. And getting more comfortable with the idea that we'll probably only have two or three best friends, really close friends, at a given time or throughout our lives. And it's okay. People, you know, I think we recognize that with romantic relationships, that they're not all going to last, or you might have some chemistry with somebody, but it's not built for the long haul. And I think that's true of friendships too. And letting go of some of the guilt and instead being grateful for what that friendship was in the moment, I think is a really freeing thing.
Rachel Wilkerson-Miller, thank you for showing up here on the Bocomi podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can get a copy of Rachel's book, The Art of Showing Up, by clicking on the link in the podcast description. If you'd like to hear more from the most wanted minds in business, science, technology and culture, please do subscribe on your chosen audio platform and sign up to our most wanted email at bocomi.com. You'll get news of upcoming guests and access to our author intelligence service for clubs and companies. I'm Rachel Schofield. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.